Okay, so Mazel Tov. I can't believe this is the 16th time we're doing Chayesara. It's wild. Okay, so this past week was the second Yahrzeit of Rabbi Sacks. So we're actually going to learn his Torah, Le'iloi Nishmaso. It is interesting, now that I commute once a week, I actually find myself needing something to listen to in the car. I haven't had a real commute in, 13, 14, no, oh my gosh, yeah, something like that. A really, really long time. So I listened to Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg on my way to and from work, and his parshas shiur is really, really fascinating. So thankfully, he gives his on Tuesday night, so I get to listen to it on Wednesday. And sometimes in a week like this, where I was struggling for a topic, he's very, very helpful. So I want to share with you a basic question that Rabbi Sacks has. And I think the...
Recording?
Yeah, yeah.
Recording?
Yeah, yeah. And the answer is far from basic. So let's take a look at the first source. So reading this pasuk anyway should give us the sense of the echo of the beginning of the parsha. Avram dies. Okay, the parsha starts with Sarah dying, but also all the questions that jump out at the beginning of the parsha. Why is it so redundant? So same thing here. Why is it right? Just tell us, Avram lived to be 175 years old. Not these are the years of Avram's life that he lived 100 years and 70 years and 5 years. So Rashi's bothered by this as well. And he says that at 100 he was like this to 70. At 70 he was like this to 5. The same way he does to Sarah. Vayigva vayamat Avram b'seva tova zaken v'saveya v'yasef elamav. So Avram dies, whatever gava means, because right afterwards it says that Avram died. B'seva tova, at a ripe old age, zakein, he's old, v'saveya, he's fulfilled, v'yasef elamav, and he's gathered to his nation. Again, that's a language of death. We have that by many of the kings in Malachim. Okay, so... Correct, correct, yeah, yeah. Now, what does that really mean by Yosef Alamav? I believe this is I think it's Rashi that says that this is proof that Terach did tshuva, because who else is he going back to, right? Nobody else from his immediate family was worth anything. So if Terach did tshuva, then that's Amav. Okay. The big question on this pasuk, though, is B'seva Tova. Okay, so an old age, I get it, he's 175, okay, he doesn't live to be like 180 like Yitzchak, but I think we'd all sign up, and he certainly eclipses Yaakov, who's only 147, Sarah, who's 127. Okay, so it sounds like it's a ripe old age. Zakein, yeah, 175 is old, even by Avraham's time period. But what about Visaveya? It sounds like he's fulfilled, he's happy. This is not a person that had an easy life. So what does that mean, visaveya? So one possible answer would be that, you know, listen, Avram Avinu recognized that he, you know, everything, that whatever it was all from God. And through that, you know, he was content with the life that he had. But still, it's a little bit hard to, you know, to look at Avram Avinu and say he had a full, happy, good life, when Avram struggled and suffered a lot during his life. Now, there were two things that Avram was promised in his life. What were they?
He'll have children,
yeah.
Let's
remember, children, not child, children. How many children is he supposed to have?
As many as the stars and the sand and the ocean.
Yeah. Right.
And personally.
Yeah, right, but he's going to have a big nation's going to come from him, and it seems like that's all going to...
He doesn't have a lot of kids. He has tons of kids.
Right, he has 8 kids, it's true, but and many, many, many nations come from him. But it sounds like this is the bracha that's directed towards, like, the Jewish line. So he dies, and what? How many people are on that line? Okay, so by the time he dies, it's, you know, it's Yitzchak, and Yitzchak has already had 2 children, so it's Yaakov and Esau. So he dies with 3 people. Now, nobody is going to say that when you see 3 stars out at night as the only stars in the sky because Shabbos is over, right? Has anybody ever used that as like their sign to know Shabbos is over?
Hawaii, when I was in Hawaii.
Okay. So,
that
but
the minion, that was the minion's minnow.
Oh.
To sit there waiting outside for the three stars, and then they don't mark.
Got it. All right. So my guess is that if you only saw three stars in the sky, you wouldn't be like, oh, wow, that's a starry night. You'd be like, what? Like, that's it? Like, okay, that's like city life. But when you go out to like the country and you expect to see stars, you expect to see stars, not three stars. It's not kechoch ve'ashamayim la'rov is not three stars. And that's all he gets. And the land of Israel, what part of the land of Israel did he get when he finally died? He has Maris and Machpelah, one little piece of land. So that's a fulfillment.
Well, I mean, he quasi had made a kinyan on the land, but he had ownership, recognized ownership on only one little piece. But why do you think that this was an instantaneous bracha? Why would anybody think you're making it's a bracha to an individual? Why would anybody think it's going to be, you know, I'm going to blink and next week I'm going to have a million kids?
No, but like you would.
This is gonna take time.
No, but it's a really big struggle. Meaning, you want to have kids, and you barely eke out one kid with Sarah, and that kid almost dies. Okay, fine. That's on the one hand. You're supposed to get the land of Israel. Okay, so now Sarah dies. He needs a piece of land just to bury her. How much space do you need to bury her? You need 6 feet by, I don't know, 6 by 6, something like that, if even. And he can't even get that piece of land. He has to sit there and he has to negotiate. And yes, it's true that the people of Chait were very generous and said, you could bury her anywhere and we'll give you, you want to bury in our cemeteries, we'll give you the choicest of plots. You're not going to have to pay for it. It's all free. But here it is. He wants to be able to say, I have a piece of property that I could bury my dead in. And he has to sit there and negotiate. And when he pays for it, 400 shekel. Although someone posted, is great. Someone posted this line that what it costs to spend the Shabbos in Hebron for Chayei Sarah nowadays is far, far more than what Avram paid for Sarah's plot. In Maris HaMachpelah. I mean, I don't know. I was gonna send that to Rosenstein last night, but I figured it's a pretty busy day for him, and he doesn't need that. But it's true. Call the Chevron Fund.
On Monday.
Call the Chevron Fund, and it won't be posted anymore on Monday. I have to screenshot it. But yeah, it's.
Yeah.
No, I know. Yeah. It was tongue in cheek. Obviously, 400 shekel back then was a lifetime's worth of earnings. And here, probably to stay in Hebron proper is cost, I mean, depending on how well you do, is a sizable amount of one's paycheck. But
$1,000. No, Dan's program starts at $1,000.
Yeah, if you want to rent an apartment. If you want to rent someone's apartment in Hebron for Shabbos, it's probably somewhere like in the neighborhood of 5 to 10,000 at least. That was a few years back, and you have to then put them up in a nice hotel in Jerusalem. You have to really wonder the people that don't take that actually stay there for Shabbos. I mean, they really are idealistic because they are giving up a month.
Or they're lazy and they don't want to clean up their apartment to have somebody else move it.
Guess, I don't know, if someone paid me a few months' salary, I'd be like a little bit torn. Anyhow, a little bit off topic, but anyway.
In terms of the bracha, the other almost had the same, had similar brachas.
Right, but by the time Yaakov.
Tons of kids, but they didn't see multiple generations with, you know, thousands of people taking over the land. They didn't see it.
No, but yeah, by the time Yaakov dies, he definitely sees. He sees the bracha of a big family. I come from
each generation. That bracha is a little bit more is you know grows exponential a little bit more. Yeah, exactly.
Right, but he he has his 12 kids, and most of them come with ease, other than Rachel. And by the time he dies, like there's generations and generations. You know, there are 70 that go down to Egypt. By the time he dies. 17 years later, presumably they're bigger. I don't know. I came from a very small family. My thank God I have three siblings, but I have one cousin on my father's side and two cousins on my mother's side. So like I have as many first cousins as I have siblings. So you know the family get together was always small, and the group shot at the simcha, like you didn't need the wide lens at all. That's where we were at. But I, you know, you meet these people who have 7-8 people within their own family, and each of their aunts and uncles on both sides, you know, they have 5 or 6 aunts and uncles on each side. You talk about the time they have first cousins, you're talking about easily 50, 60, 70 first cousins. Second cousins, you're talking about already in the hundreds. Third cousins, forget about it. I don't know. Like that to me is something that's really like, you know, it's beautiful when you see, you know, one of those family pictures where everybody's a microscopic dot. It's a nice thing. So you have to assume that Yaakov Avinu, his picture at his last birthday party where everybody came to be with him, it was massive. Again, there's no guarantee of it. I love Rav Nachman Kahana has a beautiful, you know, piece that we did years ago on Dan, where he says, could you imagine Dan had one son, and not only was he one son, he was deaf, and he, you know, by the period, time period that he lived in, he was completely special needs. They assumed that Dan was going to cease to exist as one of the Shvatim, and if it didn't, it was probably going to be the smallest one. Go take a look at the beginning of Bamidbar. They're the second or third largest Shevet, and I believe by the time the end of Bamidbar comes, they are the second biggest. Who would have thought Hushim ben Dan, one person, would become so big? So yeah, there's never, you never know, no guarantees, but certainly when Avram dies, you have to really wonder what's going to happen, you know, and Yitzhak didn't easily have those kids. It was very tough for him. So Avram's saying, oh, gee, we struggled to have kids. Now Yitzhak struggled to kids. Who knows what's going to happen by the time Yaakov is ready to have kids? Maybe they won't. I don't know. So, like, did you look something up? Because it looks.
Yeah, I did. So two things. One, the Brisbane of Sarim, right? So how big could Avram have expected anything to be if he knew that his entire nation was going to get exiled to another nation and be there for a good number of years?
I mean, Egypt.
You're not going to have millions of people that that's going to happen to.
Well, Egypt is the super. Right, but Egypt is the superpower of its.
Still, I agree, but if it, you know, we're still talking about it, wasn't that far in the future? It was a couple generations.
Okay.
How big was that going to be that I'm being driven out? I'm still small, but what struck me is the bracha that Hashem gives to Avram at the end, which says, So this sentence, he's like, who's to say that Avram, you know, had was a survey at the end? This is not Avram talking anyway. This is Hashem, the narrator, talking, and it's the exact same two words, Seva Tova, and it's Seva Tova Zakein Vesaveya. It's the same phrase as Hashem's bracha earlier.
Right. So the question is, what is Saveya mean? So I'm glad that you picked up on that. I did not, you know, remember that, but that's, you know. Right, but what exactly does that mean?
It came full circle, right? So that's what Hashem said was going to happen. That's what happened.
Right.
But it seems like what
that's
Hashem.
That's the Seva Tova, which is different than the Seveya, but that just phrase, it's kind of like
the same thing. He aged well.
Right. I guess the question would be like, what does fulfillment mean? Like, If you're expecting two things, it certainly did not, you know, it did not fall to be what you expected. If I promise a person a home and they get like a tiny hovel, yes, that is a fulfillment of the words, you will get a home. But it's not really what people are aspiring to. Yeah, Avram is told he's gonna get the land. So yes, for the three people that are in his family, Maris HaMachpelah is a sufficient land that they could use as their ancestral plot, but
that's the cornerstone.
Okay, so we'll get back to that in just in a little bit as we see Rabbi Sachs. So I just want to point out pasuk tet before we move on. Veikpruto Yitzhak v'Yishmael banav al Maris HaMachpelah al Steyafron ben Tzohar Chit Yishob Nei Mamre. He was buried by Yitzhak and Yishmael. So perhaps that's actually one of the ways that he gets this saveya. What's saveya? If a person passes away and their children are able to talk to each other and sit shiva together, that's actually not, you know, something to be taken for granted, unfortunately. And so perhaps the fact that there is peace and harmony in the family and that Yishmael accepts his position and Yitzhak is the rightful heir, that in and of itself is a reason to be saveya. Let's take a look at.
We still pay the price for it.
I hear. Yeah, actually, I don't know. We're definitely off topic and not going to go there. But someone in Shul had a really good vart last week on that. Okay, Perichav Dalet Pasuk Aleph. Avram Zakein Baba Yamim, Hashem Birachat Avram Bakol. Avram was old, Baba Yamim, and Hashem blessed him Bakol. So a couple of questions. First off, Baba Yamim, according to the Nesiva Shalom, is it's the only time in Tanakh we have the phrase Baba Yamim. If you take a look at the last source in this like grouping of psukim, Yudchet Yud Aleph, the beginning of Vayera, it says Avram v'Sara zekeinim ba'im bayamim. So we have ba'im bayamim, but according to the Nesiva Shalom, ba bayamim, only time in Tanakh. Why is that? His idea was a little bit hard to understand, and definitely did not help me at all with the Chabura. But what does Baba Yamim mean? And then Vashem Birachat Avram Bakol. Hashem blesses Avraham Bakol. What is Bakol? So Bakol, actually, there is one explanation that says Bakol is a daughter named Bakol. And there is an opinion that says the reason why Avram was Zakein, the reason why he got old and his hair turned gray, was because Hashem blessed him with a daughter. Right? I don't know. I'm saying that's like a real Meforish that says that. Not me. Thank God, I have four girls and I'm completely gray. So,
maybe. I have three.
Yeah, I don't know. You don't have as much gray as I do, Shirley.
I win.
Really.
I have one and I can totally get it.
Yeah, it's all right. You know, whatever. David doesn't like that one at all. He's like staying very quiet down there.
David's also got three.
I went white, not gray. Is that different?
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to chalk up most of my hair color to genetics, but anyhow. But anyway, that is a pshat, but there has to be a different pshat. What does it mean that Abram is blessed with everything? So then take a look at the last little source there, Chav Gimel Aleph. So again, it sounds very much like where we started. These are the years of Sarah's life. 127 years, these are the years of Sarah. Very redundant. Definitely don't need all those words. We could just write the Sarah Chaita Me'abesumishavashanim, something like that, and you would have a good, quick pasuk. Sarah dies in Kiryat Arba, which is Chevron in Eretz Canaan. Avram comes lispod l'Sarah to eulogize her and v'liv kota, and to cry for her. I don't have it here because it's, I guess probably when I play around the fonts, I lose it. But v'liv kota, the chaf is a small chaf. Why is that? So one possibility is Sarah did what she was supposed to do in her life, so Avram didn't cry on the lost opportunity in Sarah's death. Another possibility is, so to be 127, it's no slouch, right? So he's able to cry for her. Although, I will say this, when I was younger, I remember someone saying that, oh, you know, listen, it's easier when someone lives to be when someone lives to be very old, it's a little bit easier because it's not a tragedy when they die. So it's true, but at the same time, when someone lives to be, very old, I remember when my grandmother passed away at 105, it was really hard because she'd been part of my life for so long. The thought that she was no longer was on some level really, even more challenging. So Rabbi Goldberg says that perhaps what Avram's crying a little bit less to say is we have to separate between tragedy and mourning. When a person dies at 127 years old, it's mourning. It's sad. There's no question about that. But when a person dies, Nebuch, at 5 years old, 10 years old, 20 years old, that's a tragedy. And so the crying is a little bit different. And so when one should not cry, Avraham says, at the passing of someone who's really, really old, as though it's a tragedy. It's not a tragedy. And on some level, it's a celebration. It's a celebration of a beautiful, happy life. Okay, but that's all off topic. We're still stuck with Sarah lives to be 127 years old. That's what we're told she lives to be. Great. A lot of extra words. Fine. Rashi says that, you know, he gives his whole explanation of breaking up the different ages, that this, it was like this, that this, it was like this. But again, the thought is that that Sarah had a good, full, happy life. But she didn't have a good, happy life. She struggled. She, for the first 90 years of her life, she can't have a kid. That's really, really tough. Finally, in her 70s, Hagar has a kid, and then she has to deal with that for 13 years, that Hagar has a kid and she doesn't. She lives a rough life, and then how does she die? She dies by having she dies suddenly of a heart attack when she hears that her husband almost slaughtered Yitzchak. Okay, so she died by herself because nobody was with her.
That's true.
I don't know which one. Neither one sounds too great. So this is Sarah. Sarah's happy. Sarah has a good life. She doesn't have a good life, and she's waiting all her life for that her children will be like the stars of the sky. They're not. She's waiting with Avraham for the land of Israel. And when she dies, what do they have? Nothing. How could it be that Avram and Sarah are the paradigm of happiness, everything is good, when in fact it doesn't seem that way? So I want to share with you Rabbeinu Bechaye. It's interesting. It's a gematria. I'm not a gematria person in general, but when I did read this, I did feel like I had to share this with someone right away. So I took a picture of it, and I couldn't send it to the Chabura because I had a feeling that maybe I would need it. But I sent it to a fellow teacher who teaches currently third grade, and I was like, "This is amazing." Because when you teach the kids this at 100, she was like 20; at 20, she was like 7. I don't know. It's a hard one to teach. The question is easier to deal with than the answer for third graders. But this answer is great. So the Rabbeinu Bechaye has a question. He says, "Why is the pasuk so redundant?" He starts with Rashi's answer. Then he shares a different answer, which basically is that this is actually, I think it's the Ramban's answer also, that it's actually the Torah's way to talk. It just spells it out longer. What's the proof? That's how we have it by Avram also, and I believe Yishmael as well. So that's what we have. So Rabbeinu Bechaye has a different explanation. He says, V'od al derech ha-medrash, shnei chayei sarah k'minyan v'yihiyu, lamed zayin. So the years of Sarah's life, Vayihiyu, is Lamed Zayin. The real years of her life are 37, which actually corresponds to Vayihiyu. The gematria of Vayihiyu is 37. So what does that mean? Kimiyom Shnolad Yitzchak Ad Yom HaKeda. David, you came back just in time for the answer. So Rabbeinu Bechaye says that Vayu is the gematria is 37 from the day that Yitzchak was born until the day of the Akedah, the Lamed Zayin Shanai Hayu, the Heim Hayu Ikar Chayeha Shel Sarah. The main part of Sarah's life is 37 years, right? Until Yitzchak was born, there was no real life for her. Someone that has no children is as though they're dead. So what happens? Lekach yomar vayu chayei Sarah. That's why it says vayu chayei Sarah. What is the life of Sarah? The life of Sarah is vayihiyu, those 37 years. That was her purpose. Aval shnei chayei Sarah, but to talk about the life, the real life is 37, but the years is 137. So that would be how we would read the pasuk. Okay, so Rabbeinu Bechaye gives us a beautiful drush, which basically said that the person's life is those 37 years. So those 37 years, maybe she lived a fulfilled life. That's a possibility. Let's take a look. Let's go down to the first gray box. Vashem b'rachat Avram b'kol. Hatzadik ha'amiti eino mitpalel rak be'ad atzmo. Ela be'ad ha'klal kulo. This is a Kedushas Levi. It is a Hasidish Sefer. I believe the Kedushas Levi was one of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov. A tzaddik, a true tzaddik, what does he do? He davens not only for himself, he davens for everyone.
Even
That a true tzaddik, what does he get? Where does he get chios? He gets chios in life, knowing that he is that not only he is blessed, but everyone else is blessed. And if he is blessed, but no one else is blessed, he doesn't really feel a sense of purpose, a sense of fulfillment. Therefore, God knows that. God knows that Avram will only be happy when everybody else is happy. And therefore, when God blesses Avram, he blesses the whole world as well. He blessed everyone. And that's the main brach of Avram. Perhaps the Kedushas Levi could be extended to give us a better sense of how does Avraham find fulfillment in life. He finds fulfillment in life because when he dies, he knows the whole world was blessed. So if the whole world was blessed, then Avraham sees blessing in that as well. That's a second possible answer. I'll share with you a third answer. The third answer is Rabbi Sachs's answer. Rabbi Sachs quotes the famous, I feel like for him it's famous, the Chinese sage Lao Tzu says that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step. We actually have a slightly different version of that quote, and that is the quote in Perkei Avos, Perek Bet, Mishnah Tet Zayin, Hu Aya Omer. He said the following, who is he? Rabbi Tarfon. You don't have to finish the work, but you have to start it. If you learn a lot of Torah, you get a lot of reward. And the Baal HaBayis, the owner, is going to pay your reward. That you should know that the reward for tzaddikim comes in the next world. Rav Kahati, I won't show you this inside, although it's worth reading inside. Rav Kahati, I saw this recently. I was trying to finish all of Seder Nezikin by my grandmother's yard site. Try as I may, I fell about a week short. But in this marathon run through Pirkei Avos, so I didn't read everything that Rav Kahati says. But he has an amazing explanation that he uses for Lo Alech Lachalik Mor. He says, imagine the king says to everyone, listen, I need you guys to empty out this big pit of mine. So most people start and they get frustrated. Why? He's like, oh, the pit is so deep. And if we do this forever and ever and ever, we're never going to get to the bottom of it. So a lot of people give up. But he says, there are some people that say, what do I care? I'm an hourly worker. So I'm going to go to work every day. I'm going to empty out the king's pit. And if I never finish, it doesn't make a difference because what's going to happen? I'm still going to get paid. And my bank account is still going to fill up and I'll still be able to afford my bills. Says Rav Kahati, that's lo lecham lacha ligmor. Yeah, you look at the Torah. I don't know. I'm surrounded, thank God, by 5 bookcases full of svarim. If I spend the rest of my life, every day that I'm, that I'm awake, or every moment that I'm awake, learning through all the svarim, I probably won't finish all of it. So you could say, it's not worth it. No, lo alecha m'lacha ligmor, lo ata ben chorim v'atel menu. Start. Even just starting, that in and of itself is enough. Says Rabbi Sachs, that's actually where Avram and Sarah were. Avram and Sarah were told that they were going to be blessed with these two things. God blesses Avram 7 times with the land, 4 times with children. That's how many times he told it. And yet he dies and feels like, I have only one child. I have only one piece of the land of Israel. Says Rabbi Sachs, he gets nechama. Why? Because I started the journey. It's lo alecham lachalik mor. I don't have to finish it, but I took the first step. I have a child. And that child is married and has 2 children. We're 1 step closer to being kechochvei ha'shamayim larov. Yeah, I didn't have a piece of property when Sarah died. That was rough. But guess what? I have enough of a property now. That's my start. My children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren will be able to continue it. That is Rabbi Sachs' explanation of how Avram finds fulfillment. I'll share with you one last answer. And at first, when I saw this, it's interesting. Kedushas Levi versus the Divrei Eliyahu. Divrei Eliyahu is the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon's pshat seems less pshat, then the Kedushas Levi, which is ironic. It's usually the other way around. But the Vilna Gaon at first seemed very strange until I thought a little bit about it. And then I found a great, great, great line from Rabbi Sacks. And after that, I felt that maybe this is an amazing answer. Hashem Yerachad Avram Bakol. Hashem blessed Avram with everything. What's everything? The Vilna Gaon asked his students, Menayin Shekiyam Avram Avinu Mitzah Sukkah. How do you know that Avram Avinu kept Mitzah Sukkah? So one, it could have been from last week's parsha, right? Avram Avinu served the angels. They were underneath the sky. So it could be that that's Pshat and Sukkah. But he gives a different answer. The Vilna Gaon says nobody had an answer. Nanahu Vayomar, he answered the following. Itu b'medrish, Hashem birachad Avram Bakol. It says that Hashem blessed Avram Bakol. Zo Sukkah. He was blessed with everything. What's everything? A Sukkah. Vahu kamat mayim. His students were shocked. What does that even mean? Vayomer b'chol no terikon. He says no terikon. No terikon is like, it's not gematria, but it's one of those like also areas of explanation in the Torah where you sit there and you're like, it stands for different words that are couched in it. It seems like a little bit of a stretch, but he says like this. You have in Bakol, Basukos Teshu Shivas Yamim, three references to the mitzvah of Sukkah. What in the world does that have to do with anything? And why is it that when Avram is blessed with everything, he's blessed with Sukkah? What are we supposed to do with that? So I'll end with this beautiful quote from Rabbi Sacks. What is truly remarkable is that is called, we're talking about Sukkahs here, by tradition, Zman Simchasenu. That to me is a wonder at the heart of the Jewish experience. The Jews throughout the ages were able to experience risk and uncertainty at every level of their existence. And yet when they sat betzila dememnuta under the shadow of faith, this is how the Zohar describes the Sukkah, they were able to rejoice. That is spiritual courage of a high order. I've often argued that faith is not certainty. Faith is the courage to live with uncertainty. And that is what Sukkot represents. That is what we celebrate in Sukkot. Sukkot is the idea of being vulnerable, open to the wind, the rain, and the cloud. Avram died fulfilled because he had the courage to live with uncertainty. He looks and says, I don't know if I truly am going to get what God promised me, but I have faith. And faith is the ability to live with uncertainty. It's an unbelievable explanation. Avram and Sarah are able to find for themselves. They're able to find for themselves contentment, right? Well, they die, sfeim, ba'im ba'yamim. Both of them are old. They have full of days. They had hard days, and yet they die with a sense of fulfillment. Why? It didn't come true. Sarah doesn't die. When Sarah dies, she has a kid who's not married and nowhere, no piece of land in Israel. Doesn't sound very promising, but faith is the courage to live with uncertainty. And Avram Avinu and Sarah Imenu, they were the embodiment of living like that. Every step of their way, all of their tests were basically a proof that they believe in God and that they were able to continue to take one more step and one more step with all the uncertainty that life throws at them. That is how they truly could be content people. I think that is a tremendous message to all of us because we live in a time where, on the one hand, we expect everything to be easy because life is easier, but there is a great deal of uncertainty in every one of our days. And I think finding faith or living with faith is recognizing that God is there for us somehow, somewhere. That's the courage to live with uncertainty. And Sukkot truly then becomes the embodiment of the Jewish experience. Hopefully, life should be more certain and more clear for us. But in times of struggle, we should hopefully find comfort in Avram and Sarah's example.